There's nothing more important in a person's life than that Bill of Rights and understanding what their individual freedoms and liberties are. The fact is, if you're not violating another's rights, there is no limit. I mean, there is nothing you cannot do. We're going to hit some articles today talking about the consumption of marijuana and the fact that Jeff Sessions wants to come after medical marijuana, don't you know? Well, again, this is without authority. The government's never had nobody has the authority to tell you what you can or cannot take into your own body. If your body isn't your own possession, well, nothing is. I mean, there would be no conception of any kind of freedom and liberty. It is your right to be at peace with yourself and left alone. And you're going to see it we see it every day. Others thinking that they have a better idea of what's good for you and how you should live. And we've seen statutes, illegal policies enacted upon us and enforced upon us using deadly force under the notion that it harms society. This is the very reason that our true founders insisted upon that Bill of Rights. And of course, we covered the fact that the Federalists, they said that, you know, we don't need no Bill of Rights. The limited powers right there in the Constitution. We can't go on now. We can't never touch your rights. I think that the anti-Federalists were a little more in tune with the true intent of those aristocrats who wrote that Constitution, I do believe. Like I said, all of these traffic laws, I mean, any time that you're accosted, any time that you are detained in your travels, it can only be through warrant. I mean, you have the right to go about your business as long as you're not bothering anybody. A taillight out in your car, man, people are getting killed today. A signal light out, just walk up and just shoot you. We've seen it and get away with it because we're at the point where that they are trying to completely remove the Bill of Rights. It certainly has been hidden. I mean, purposely. From the first day in school, if there was the intent that people live fruitful, free lives, the Bill of Rights would be taught it should be taught from like third grade on. And then before you would ever graduate or become of the age of maturity, you should know how to prosecute your life through the common law that you are guaranteed. When I say prosecute your life, that's truly what we're talking about here. I'm going about my business. I want to do something. Can I do it? Well, yes, I can. How do I come to that determination? Well, because I'm not bothering anybody else and doing it. I'm violating no other's rights. Well, the government, they've decided that your actions harm society in some way. I'm trying to think of an instance like the smoking when they came in and started putting big taxes on cigarettes and stuff because, it's a burden on society because you get sick with the cigarettes and then I have to pay for it. Boy, they sold that to people, didn't they? What was left out of the equation there is, no, you don't have to pay for me if I get cancer and die. That's on me. I cannot come to you and say, I want your property to take care of my problem. That's how the Bill of Rights protects you from such things. But people, no, the government ought to step in. The government ought to stop and make a law and make, tax these people and use that money instead of taking my money. And of course, all the money goes to the states anyway. And they really don't care if you live or die. And I think everybody understands that this point in the ballgame. Again, by the time you reach the age of maturity, you should be able to write out a lawsuit or a criminal complaint and prosecute it. I mean, that should be the test before you enter into society as a full adult. That should be the test if somebody wants to be emancipated, that should be the test. I'm sure within the Admiralty, it's some kind of communist indoctrination test. Do you know how to get to your local communist to spill your problems on them and beg them to take care of them for you? Man, these allergies suck. At any rate, The one thing I wanted to add is, if you want to, you know, everybody's probably saying, yeah, you know, I understand what you're saying, but how do I apply it? Well, it would be applied. What the things to remember is that the basic structure, if you want to see a basic structure for to move a court, you would look in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure and see how that document's put together. And then, keeping in mind that that was put together by Pettifog and Mobo Conceptize with an agenda, you understand that in the common law, it's fact. There is no conjecture. It is all fact. And every document filed in a common law court must be in affidavit form. That means it's sworn testimony. Every bit of testimony. I mean, the things we see today going on in the courts is just, it's they're not our courts, and they're admiralty courts. They're the king's courts. But what we see going on is just completely ridiculous. That we talked about the Bundys and the fact that, you know, you can have three witnesses. Oh, really? Well, I guess this isn't a court of common law justice. It's an admiralty court where the court has already taken the liberty of deciding the guilt or innocence on a statute that cannot relate to me, because the government could never make laws to control me. But again, every document in the common law, it's every bit of testimony, and that's really what you're doing. Even with a filing, when you file a civil action or a criminal complaint, what you're doing is you're giving testimony. You're giving testimony to the court. And all testimony has to be sworn testimony, because the penalty of perjury has to be there. Otherwise, people would abuse the law. So the thing being, if somebody abuses the law and you force them through the Bill of Rights, through the Fourth Article, to go and make perjured statements, of which you can turn around and you can get redress for the trouble they've caused you, trying to use the law for the wrong purposes. I'd like to emphasize that when you see a violation of the Bill of Rights, we talked about separating the rights. So they'll come up and talk about the Fourth or Fifth or the Tenth Article. You hear it a lot. The Fourth Article is completely violated. It is infringed beyond belief by this occupying Vichy force that is in our country. The Fifth Article, you know, the due process, that they'd like to sit down and presume that they, you know, just like the Second Article, I fought it every inch of the way, but in the day it should have been stopped dead in its tracks back in 1930, I think it was 1935 or 1934. Maybe 1933, with the first Gun Control Act. I mean, we talked yesterday about this endless list of government agencies, thousands of them that are milking us dry. You talk about eating out your substance. You talk about the king eating out your substance. At any rate, this huge bureaucracy that cannot exist has become a wall between you and your rights. And the presumption that they ever had any authority over your rights is dispelled by the Ninth Article. To say that our Supreme Court is going to, they've made exceptions to your Second Article uninfringed, unalienable right. They've made exceptions. They're going to diagnose it and say what it is. No, you're not. Why? Because the Ninth Article says you can't touch it. It says you cannot create an authority. You cannot create a Supreme Court that can touch it. And then finally, people, I would say that it's absolute. It is absolute law written in absolute fact. It is the maximums and the procedures for our common law that keeps us free. And it has to stay that way. I mean, there's always somebody, there's going to be a good reason why you should. Well, you know, in the beginning, women were excluded. Blacks were excluded. Indians were excluded. There were a lot of people excluded. You know, the aristocrats, they wanted to make sure that as many people were excluded from it, because they understood the absolute intent of the Bill of Rights also. But before they could start dismantling it, they had to start with an exception. Because what makes the Bill of Rights the power that it is that it is absolute. And just as simple as this, people, something that is absolute, there is no exception. There cannot be, otherwise it's not absolute and it doesn't work. If you allow one exception, you can say, well, we're only going to allow this exception, but then you done crossed that line. Then when you look back at the Bill of Rights, when you looked at it before you made that exception, it was absolute. You look back, it is not absolute. There is an exception to the absolute, and there cannot be. That is a contradiction in terms. So teach your children well. Learn the Bill of Rights and understand that you have to see it enforced. Sometimes it's a hard thing to do. The times that I've gone to jail and been beaten, I was not there for myself. I was there because I saw the violations, and I knew it was my responsibility to take it to task. And I understood how corrupt the judicial was. But it was my aim to take it right to the limit, to make them violate the law knowingly and right there and look me in the eye while they were doing it and affirm that there was no way that they didn't understand what they were doing. They understand exactly what they're doing. That's why they are guilty of treason with malice and forethought. It was, and you know, when they first started removing the Bill of Rights, they did. They kept it compartmentalized, the tactics they were using, and they'd use certain tactics here. And as they were training the next batch of pettifoggers coming up through the system, they would give them a little bit more of the admiralty and remove a little bit more of the common law. And when I got to tell you, when we hit them hard, I mean, I hit them hard because I was the only one here doing it. When I hit them hard with it, when I had it right, they didn't know what to do. They couldn't speak. Some of them walked right off the bench. And then you seen the federal cars show up, you know, with the U.S. government plates on them, lying both sides of the street. I mean, all the suits coming in. And then they're actually bringing people who understand it. And they know that they knew then that what I was saying was the absolute truth. It was the law. And that it bound them. And it was my authority over them. And the thing is, by this point, it had become, it's just like the asset forfeiture laws. Now, they have been so, I mean, they couldn't exist, okay? They are a running violation of the Bill of Rights, every right in the Bill of Rights. But they did do what they did. And it came to the point to where people are going, hey, man, you are taking people's property that doesn't even have anything to do with your policy that you wrote down on the piece of paper and signed your name to. And that they came back and you know, they were told that they were going to have to stop doing this because it had become such a blatant violation. That they couldn't explain it to the people who were sitting out there, the stupid people who were still letting them exist as a government. And what did they say? They'd come dependent upon it. This is our general fund. We can't operate the government. My goodness, people. Look at that list that was provided yesterday. That's just the federal bureaucracy. That's just the head agencies. That isn't the people that are working for them. And not for you and me. They are no longer our servants. They have usurped our Bill of Rights. They've usurped the Constitution contract that gave them the little bit of authority that they were allowed in the beginning. They are rogue. They are illegitimate. It is an occupation. And I'm here to tell you that it will not end peaceably. We're right back to where we were back in April 18, 1775. They have they've made up their mind that they're going to be the masters, we're going to be the slaves. And again, back to April 18th, 1775. At some point they have to come for the guns. I mean, they have been out terrorizing people across the country. I've said it before, I think it's gonna take a significant move, or else it's gonna be a little while. People are gonna have to really get starved down to the point to where, you know, they're going hungry. They're being beaten every time they walk out of their house, because that seems to be what it's gonna take for some people. Rather than just saying, man, I cannot live without my freedoms and liberties. I cannot live without just being left alone. The thought that somebody can just come to you and just start bothering you for no reason. That is a violation of your rights, and they have set up a rogue, foreign-controlled government, wherein they're, you know, the Bill of Rights has been flushed down the toilet. I mean, there's a commercial that plays on the radio sometimes talking about we're not the freest country on the earth anymore. And they lays out this big list of socialist countries that have all these freedoms. Well, we're not the freest country on the planet anymore, because we have allowed our freedoms to be, we've had allowed injunction to be put upon them. We have allowed a rogue body to take over what was supposed to be a service industry for us. We talked about California. Now, under California, you know, again, let's go with the writ of mandamus. I heard somebody talking about this morning that didn't know what they were talking about. But the writ of mandamus. Now, let's put this thing together in perspective. We are the masters. They are the servants. They work for us. And the Bill of Rights is a bill of prohibitions. That says you will not ever do this. And they're stepping out of line. They're not doing what we're telling them to do. We are the masters. They are the servants. And that writ of mandamus, that is what it's for. It wasn't for a back and forth for judicial this or BS this from any judges. That was our mechanism, excuse me. That was our mechanism for our control. You got to say, well, they work for us, but man, I can't tell them what to do. Well, yeah, you can. And that's what the writ of mandamus was about. Any government official, hell, anybody, even another person, the writ is just it's a lawful order to obey the law. That's what a mandamus comes down to. Now, right now, because Donald J. Trump, is posing, he's acting as the chief executive of in the contract that we call our Constitution. It should be a simple matter. I'm telling you, this is just all it should take. If things hadn't have gone this far, if we hadn't let it get this far out of control, just a simple mandamus from any American national to Donald J. Trump. You will go to California and you will remove every infringement put upon our Second Article Bill of Rights. You will send the military to arrest those who are usurping our Second Article Bill of Rights. And acting under color of authority to remove our right to own and bear arms as guaranteed, as absolute by our second article. And that's all it should take, people. Once he receives it, he's got 7 days to act under the common law. And then them troops better be there, or else you can go down there and start shooting them. And see, this is what it was supposed. We were supposed to be this aware of our rights to the point of, you know, we're just completely gone now, but to the point of the first time that something like this happened, you know, let's say it was a little municipality who said you weren't going to carry a gun in town. Well, yes, I am, because you have no authority to tell me otherwise. Well, we're just a little town, and they would say, the federal government, they might ensure your rights. Yeah, you betcha, buddy. And the 10th article to that Bill of Rights says that what is prohibited to them is prohibited to you. Now, I will give you a mandamus. I'm going to order you to obey the law. And then I'm going to send to Washington, D.C. another mandamus ordering them to bring in enforcement for the Bill of Rights, for the second article. And, well, 7 days later, nobody responds. We throw the militia together. You go into town and you hang some people. And you let it be known. You will not violate that Bill of Rights. This is what should have been done. The death that would have had to have occurred from the original enactment of the Bill of Rights to today would be a bit of a number, but it ain't nothing like what's getting ready to happen now. There is going to, a couple million of our people are going to die right out the gate. And if it started tomorrow, if they just came out and Trump came out and said, I've just decided because, well, I'm the king, that I want all the weapons turned in. There's too much violence in my kingdom. We're sending out people to confiscate the guns. Now that would get her going. It would bust loose and you'd lose 2 million people because there's 2 million people who are just going to die trying to figure out what to do about it because they've not paid attention. All they've cared about is their comfort spots, their feathered beds, and their comfort zones. And so when it would come at us, it would become pretty evident to everybody once the fighting started that, hey, man, they're coming here. They mean business. They're as dangerous as the Russians were in 1917. They're as dangerous as Mao Zedong in 1960. I guess it is really. It's real. And then, well, we better get our act together. You better call Joe and Tim and Bob and Ralph, and you better get them together. Do you got any bullets, Ralph? Well, I got a box for my gun. I'm ready. No, you're not. There are so people that...
Henry?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, hi there. How are you doing?
I'm well. And you?
Good. Glad to hear it. You're welcome. I had a question. You mentioned correct me if I'm saying it incorrectly, the federal rules for civil procedure.
Correct.
Okay, well, will I see something about the writ of mandamus in there?
Nope. The writs...
Nope.
No, the federal rules for civil procedure are basically... what you would see if you went to it before the justice courts were completely removed, when you used to go there to get if you say you wanted to sue your neighbor because they, you know, broke your fence, they would give you on form basically what the documents look like in the federal rules of civil procedure, but they even that was incomplete. It was just enough so they could get in there and you could play Judge Wapner. It wasn't real law. But what the federal rules of civil procedure, they'll tell you, like in a civil, they'll give you the civil procedure, like if somebody did break your fence. The first thing you would do is you would, you'd write them a letter of demand, like I said, in the common law, in the true law, they'll tell you, just write a letter, tell them you broke my fence and, I want some money for it. But that's not how it works. It would be an affidavit form. It would be written in fact. You would have the dates correct, the times correct, and you would tell how the fence got broke. And it would be sworn testimony, and you would, because it is a civil matter, you wouldn't need a second witness, though you may have witnesses in the background, because you're just writing a letter of demand. Anyway, you'd write your letter of demand, and the person you wrote it to, I think, would have 30 days to reply. And if they replied back and said, I broke your fence, I'm going to pay, I'll have somebody come and put a fence in. If that settles it, fine. If it doesn't, or they come back and say, I'm just not going to pay for your fence, well, then you would move on to the next stage, which means you would actually go to the court. But, you know, on a fence, like I said, they give you some form that isn't accurate. I mean, it wouldn't be purely true in common law, but it would be the procedure. The next point would be a complaint, where you'd write out the complaint in affidavit form, and if you had a second witness, it would be sweet to have them there, because it was a crime to tear down your fence. Maybe they did it maliciously. Maybe you want to throw a crime in there. If you did, you'd need the second witness. If you didn't, you wouldn't. You would just, I mean, maybe you had photographs of, or maybe you caught them on film tearing up your fence. You would file your complaint. They would have 30 days to file their answer or a counter complaint. If they failed, then you would have a summary judgment. They would owe you the money for the fence. And you could say, well, that don't work too well because that ain't the court. And actually the court can't force them to pay you, give you their property, for something like a fence. They can't confiscate it, but once you have a judgment, you have an open judgment that hasn't been satisfied, and you can sure as heck go down and put a lien on everything they own that is registered with the county or the state where, you know, properties, whatever it might be. And if ever they want to sell their properties, most people don't like to have a lien on their property, especially if they're in the wrong. They'll just go ahead and pay you. But say they don't, and say maybe they come back and say, man, I didn't tear up your fence, or I didn't do the damage that you're claiming. I did put a little dent in your fence, but hell, you got a whole section tore out there. I didn't do that. I put a little dent, and that's all I'm paying for. And I will pay for that, but no more. And so then you get, well, we're going to have us a jury trial to see what's going on here, to see who's in the right and who's in the wrong, who owes what. So then you would go and you would file for the trial. You want a jury trial. You just file an affidavit saying that I'm who I am and I demand the right to a jury trial in this case number blah, blah, blah. And then they would put a jury together in the common law. The sheriff would go out in the streets and pick the first 12 people that he's seen and said, you're going to be on a jury. Because you won a cross section, and that is your right. I mean, this is where your right to a verdict by your peers falls into the equation. So then they would put the people together. You would set a trial date, and you'd come in. You'd present your evidence. The other person would present their evidence. It would go to the jury. The jury would come out with the verdict. The judge would read it, and that case would be settled. And everybody would agree upon it because they had the process. You had your rights protected. And generally, 12 people listening to testimony will get things pretty close to correct if they're decent folk, which used to be what this country was made up of. Back to Katie's question, on the writ. This is kind of like a letter of demand. I mean, in an enforcement issue. Let's say you went out on your property and some people were on your property. You go, what are you doing here? You're on private property. You need to leave. Well, we're here mapping out a oil pipeline to go across your property here. We've gotten an authorization from the county and the state that says we can do it. Really? Really, you did? I don't recall no due process of law there. Did you just got okay from the state to come on my property? I got news for you, buddy. The state has no authority over my property. I'm a free national of the United States. So what would you do? Well, the first thing you do, probably call the sheriff. Because the sheriff, I mean, when you think about how you would actually use these in the real world, if you had that limited government, which you do not have, it wasn't that much. I mean, there were only a few officials. And they were, I mean, they were either, you know, involved in the commerce end of it or else they were a constable or a sheriff right from the people or a justice of the peace. So you call the sheriff out there and you say, Sheriff, I want these people off my property right now. Get them out of here now or I'm going to have to get ugly about this. And the sheriff go, well, and the guy walk over and show you, this is my permission from the state. I can go right through here. Really? Then the sheriff, he's sitting here looking at that paper, and he goes, well, he's got this paper, so you'd sit down and you'd write you a mandamus. And everything, like I said, I don't even look at it as like this federal rules of civil procedure, criminal procedure, any of this crap anymore. It's just straight up affidavits. It's inserting authority through affidavits of truth. And so I would head my document, affidavit of truth, for the office of the sheriff for the county of the Klamath for the state of the Oregon. And I'd start out, you know, describing my, say, I, the undersigned of this document, am the affiant within, as affirmed by the affiant. End of statement. And then I would go on and see, you don't get them for what they do. You get them for what they fail to do. Because the Bill of Rights is a prohibition. And they are sworn, each one of them. That's why they raise that hand and they swear to protect and defend the Constitution, and that's the Bill of Rights, against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I would tell that, I would lay it out to that sheriff, you know, that on this date, these people, you would write it in present tense always, whatever so-and-so is on my property, located, you'd identify the property right down to the lot. And, without my authorization. And then you'd come to the next sentence and lay it all out again as affirmed by the affiant. They were asked to leave the property. They won't leave. As affirmed by the affiant, the sheriff was, you know, you'd lay it out and it would be written in fact. The sheriff is called to the property by, the affiant, for the purpose of the removal of the unlawful, perpetrators upon the property. And then, so you go on down through it and you lay it all out and then you put that the sheriff, has failed to, secure the fourth article right of the affiant is there is no warrant was, you know, you lay it out. There was no warrant. There is no legal authorization. There was no due process. Like I said, you can go right down the Bill of Rights. Anytime one of them is violated, you can pretty much throw them all in there because it is. But you put them. They failed. They failed to uphold their oath because their oath says they will protect and defend it. And then you would, at the end of it, you would order that sheriff. You would order that sheriff to enforce the law, which would be your fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth article rights to the due process. And the sheriff, I mean, he's under lawful order now. If he goes along with it one more step, then the next step is the magistrate, where you go and you file a criminal complaint against him for violation of his oath of office, and you lay it out the same way in an affidavit. The top of it say affidavit for the truth in the court for the superior for the county of the Klamath in the state of the Oregon, and you would lay it out for the superior court, and then you would demand a jury trial on the fact. And so then once you've filed, I mean, you file a criminal charge against the sheriff. That is a crime. To violate the oath is a crime. And they would also be participating in the crime of trespass upon your property. So you would order it all stopped, and you'd order the law to be obeyed. If it didn't occur, if the magistrate didn't directly order it, then you would file the criminal charges, and you would take it. And eventually, after you follow the process to make sure everybody's rights are secured, you'll end up in front of a jury consisting of 12 people dragged off the street who also live in your community and have property there, and they would be like, what? Well, only thing that they could look at is the fact. Did they have a warrant to be on your property? Well, no, they didn't. Did they go to a court to get an order from a court to be on your property? Well, they can't. They're a big corporation out of Canada. They can't even come in our courts. And the government went along with this? Who went along with this? I mean, this is what it would be in a grand jury investigation. Then the grand jury would start calling people in before the trial ever started. And you'd probably have a whole handful of indictments by the time the day. They just wouldn't have done it in the day, people, when people understood how to enforce their rights. And should this all fail, there's the second article. You have the right. Then you come to force majeure. The law has failed to do what the law says it has to do. That means there is no law. That means I have the right to defend myself and my property by any means I find necessary. There is no law. And that's where we're really at today.